fasten your seatbelts, and turn up your radio. We're going on a road trip. In August, the world watched as more than 122,000 people were airlifted out of Afghanistan after the Taliban surged back to power, 2 decades after U.S.-led forces toppled its regime. The end of the United States' longest war involved a chaotic 2-week withdrawal process and the end of major military operations there. Thousands of Afghans who assisted the United States and its allies fled their home country, being housed temporarily at military installations, including Wisconsin's Fort McCoy. The more than 13,000 Afghan refugees who were brought to the base have since been relocated to communities throughout the country. Many are now living in communities like Wausau and Eau Claire, where efforts are underway to ensure they adjust to their new homes and their new lives. Welcome to Route 51. I'm Shereen Seewert. The U.S. State Department approved the resettlement of 850 Afghan refugees in Wisconsin. Those who arrive seeking a safe haven are greeted at local airports with coalitions of nonprofit partners, local business representatives, interfaith organizations, and local government leaders who have joined together to help them find housing, clothing, transportation, employment, and educational opportunities. Often they're greeted with signs of welcome, a change of clothes, an extra set of arms for holding babies, quiet support, and crucial tips and tricks to help them understand life in their new homes. But they're also greeted at times with suspicion from residents concerned about their past, creating challenges that are not easily overcome. As we take a look at the resettlement process now underway, we encourage you to join the conversation by calling us at 800-780-9742. You can also email questions to us at ideas@wpr.org. In Wausau, several families arrived in recent weeks and are now settling into their new homes. Here to talk with us today about the process is Wausau Mayor Katie Rosenberg. Katie, thank you for joining us today.
Hi, thanks for letting me join you.
Also from Wausau is Margaret Pagoria, who is program coordinator with New Beginnings for Refugees. This is a volunteer-based organization that is aiding in the resettlement process. Margaret, welcome.
Hello, thank you for having me on.
In Eau Claire, officials there are working with individuals rather than families. Bea Evans, one of the founders of Welcoming New Neighbors Northwest Wisconsin Refugee Resettlement, is here today to talk with us about that process. Bea, welcome to Route 51.
Thanks, Shereen. It's great to be here.
One of the biggest barriers to success in the resettlement process has to be fear. When this process began, there were some pretty dire predictions and speculation about public safety. And I know that resettlement agencies worked pretty hard to push back on those fears. But then we had a situation. I want to bring that up right away. One of the men who resettled in Wausau was arrested and accused of sexual assault. I know that that charge was just filed this week and has not yet gone through the court system. Katie, what happened?
Yeah, so, you know, it sounds, obviously I know what you know, what I read in the media. So one of the volunteers has accused one of the refugees of sexual assault. And, you know, obviously, like any crime that's reported to our police, they took it seriously immediately. They are investigating, and now it's going through the justice system just like it would for anybody accused of this crime. Obviously, it definitely tore open some new kind of difficult discussions anywhere from social media or in the public. So, you know, we kind of have these two things. On the one hand, supporting the victim, supporting due process, and then managing the conversations in the public and, you know, people saying their worst nightmares have come to fruition. And again, it's been a difficult kind of conversation to wade. And I've mostly been listening because, you know, I wasn't part of it, and I don't really know what to do other than support the victim and support due process. So I think having that challenge right up front, it is a challenge for our whole community. But
have you heard much from residents or other folks that are concerned about this and who are saying, hey, look, you know, something needs to be done about this? What are you hearing?
Yeah, you know, I haven't heard from a lot of people. I had a few emails off the bat from folks saying, well, look what you did here. This is all your fault. And, you know, people are voicing their concerns in that way. And then I have other folks just saying that, you know, thank you for, you know, I did put something out on social media about it, about the situation, and people just saying thank you for, you know, allowing the process to unfold. And again, I'm not involved in the process, so it's doing exactly what it should be doing for anybody involved in this kind of a situation. So again, we have support for victims in the city, and we have support for due process through our justice system.
When the news broke about this in Wausau, did it have any effect on public opinion in Eau Claire? Bea, what did you hear?
No, we've heard reference to this to the incident, but it really did not impact our moving forward. I think that from my understanding in Wausau, there has been really a really citywide effort that has been going on for a while to support resettlement efforts. We came on the scene a little bit later. We didn't start talking until the end of November, beginning of December. And it wasn't until early January that we were even saying, wait, can we even think about resettling refugees in this part of the state? So we haven't garnered a whole lot of public support. We have a tremendous core of volunteers. We have almost 100 volunteers, but I don't think we have the visibility around our efforts yet that you have had in Wausau.
Margaret, you have been part of this process for some time now. And how can your organization or other organizations really work to effectively calm the fears of residents who they're worried about this arrest? Or frankly, they're faced with these memories of 9/11 when anybody talks about Afghanistan. What do you say to somebody who is apprehensive about having a refugee as a neighbor?
Well, you know, I think first and foremost, you know, ECDC and New Beginnings for Refugees, we want to be very clear that we condemn all acts of interpersonal violence. You know, that said, we encourage the media and the public to, you know, give this time and let people do their jobs. Do our best to suspend judgment as we advocate for fair and just representation on both sides. And so, you know, our agencies are, you know, profoundly committed to that. And early on, you know, we really have communicated that our long-term resettlement success is the goal. And so we feel that through really collaborating closely with so many agencies throughout our community, you know, careful planning, working with an experienced resettlement agency, ECDC, strong interagency support from our community will, you know, help our community heal and continue to get the education that we all need.
Social norms are very different here than they are in Afghanistan. This is a very different society that these people are coming into. Bea, what is your organization doing to help refugees understand what behavior is and is not acceptable or appropriate here?
And we're very fortunate to have a group of attorneys who are very familiar with immigration law as well as cross-cultural situations. And so they have met with our new neighbors and talked about various issues regarding norms as well as laws and responsibilities as a group. And now they are meeting with them individually to kind of review that information as they proceed. The other thing is that they're each individual has a household team that they are working with, and they have community guides as part of that team. And so there will be ongoing conversation about living in the United States and our rules and regulations and our culture and norms. I think it's a learning curve, just like it would be for us if we were transported to live in another country that we weren't familiar with. And I think that that's something that's been going through my mind a great deal. Somebody was talking about how one of the new neighbors was objecting to the odors that were cooking odors that were coming upstairs to their apartment from the landlords downstairs. And I kind of thought, yeah, I've been in India and those cooking odors are kind of disconcerting when you're not familiar with those smells. And I'm only a visitor. I can only imagine what it feels like to be transported to another part of the world and trying to get used to so many things at the same time.
B mentioned teams of people who are helping each individual come. Margaret, is that something that's happening in Wausau? Is it a similar situation where you have a team of people that's helping each family, or how does that work?
Yeah, so part of the structures of support that ECDC has in place is we, prior to a family's arrival, we train and recruit volunteers to be what we call co-sponsorship team. So each team consists of 7 members or more. And the idea with that is that the individuals who are signing up to be part of this team very much walk this journey with the new families arriving. Really, it's a 9 to 12 month commitment. And, the idea is that very much what, you're both describing is putting ourselves in the shoes of people that many of them had very traumatic departures. And they were forced to flee their home country. So we are very committed to not only successful resettlement, but also compassionate resettlement. And we feel that just meeting core needs, our community just really felt that we could do better than that. And so these teams are volunteers who are very dedicated and very committed. It has been probably the most rewarding aspect of my job is to see the social bonds happening as these teams help the families in their very first critical steps of resettlement. It's, getting people to their appointments and helping their kids register for school, helping them figure out the bus lines, getting them to the grocery store, getting them to their initial appointments for all the sort of initial core services that we provide, we're helping them access. So it's a wonderful system. We currently have 14 teams. So it adds up to about 100 people that are currently involved. And it's really been a very successful model.
And what is ECDC exactly?
So it's the Ethiopian Development and Community Council, Development Council. And so they are just one of 9 national resettlement agencies. And Wausau was identified as they were looking to expand in Wisconsin. And Wausau was identified, we're a really great mid-sized community, and there was really strong community support. And we do have public transportation, and we had some precedents resettling families that didn't have existing community or family ties to the state with our Hmong resettlement of the past. So, I think what's been really, rewarding is to see that I think we've built on sort of that, those initial foundations, and then I do believe with the co-sponsorship team model, we just really feel very committed to not just getting families here and not just getting them in jobs. We want them to adjust and transition smoothly, and feel welcome in the community.
Briefly, Katie, how did Wausau become a location for resettlement? How did that come about?
Yeah, it was kind of like a weird dating match kind of a thing. So I had some folks reach out to me last year saying, they were doing some kind of contemplation in their church, and they said, hey, we're interested in helping refugees. How do we do this? And of course, my answer is I have no idea. So I started reaching out to some people in the state, and I got in touch eventually with Boyana, who I know you've interviewed before. She's the state refugee coordinator, and she's really an amazing person. We were talking about what this looks like, and she said, I have this resettlement agency who's looking for a new place to start in Wisconsin. Maybe we should have a chat together. So we did, and again, it was kind of this strange matchmaking thing that happened, and they came for a visit. They checked out all kinds of stuff. I know that they talked to landlords and all kinds of folks who are interested in this. And long story short, I'm getting the wrap up here. they put us on their application along with several other cities to start their agency here. And the Department of State in October said, yep, WASA, you're getting this office. So.
You're listening to Katie Rosenberg, Bea Evans, and Margaret Pegoria, our guests today on Route 51. When we return, we'll hear more about the Afghan resettlement process, some of the stories our guests are learning about the horrors these new residents experienced before fleeing their home country as well. Join the conversation by calling 800-780-9742. You can also send an email to ideas@wpr.org. I'm Shereen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. Back on Route 51, I'm Shereen Seward. Bea Evans, Margaret Pegoria, and WASA Mayor Katie Rosenberg are our guests today as we discuss the Afghan refugee resettlement process in communities throughout Wisconsin. What would you like to know? You can email us at ideas@wpr.org or join us by phone at 800-780-9742. One of the defining images of August 2021 for me forever will be the sight of people desperately chasing after a U.S. Air Force jet along the runway at Kabul Airport as the West's 20-year occupation came to an end. It was astonishing to watch. Margaret, what does this tell us about the speed at which people had to just abandon everything when disaster struck? There was really no time for an orderly queue, correct papers, and possessions. What does that tell us?
Yeah, you know, I think the stories that I'm hearing and the personal accounts of just about every single family, it's, you know, what I sort of keep expressing to them is truly from an American perspective, it's honestly just hard to even imagine. We have, you know, various individuals that were interfacing directly with members of the Taliban. You know, searching for them and their families. We have people that were very closely aligned with the U.S. government and, you know, having to set their alarm clocks at 2 a.m. For fear of the Taliban coming. And you know, they had, you know, young children and you know, a wife, but watching because they just were on such high alert. And so it really speaks to the risk that they were taking. You know, I think we have to remember that many of those arriving were working to build a better life in Afghanistan. They were working to build a better Afghanistan. That was their purpose. They were supporting the U.S. in that effort. It didn't work, and they were driven from their homes, and they risked their lives, you know, for building the Afghanistan and to rebuild. So I just, you know, really want people to know that we can be very proud of the U.S., that we have these programs. We have stopgap agencies and resettlement agencies that are committed to getting people who need help the help they need.
Katie, you spent some time with some of the early refugees who arrived, listened to their stories. What did you hear?
Yeah, I was blown away. I mean, I saw those images too. And just as a human being on this planet, you wonder, how can this happen? And, you know, that war having gone on since, I mean, my entire adult life, you know, it felt to me like we had to do something. And so when I spent some time talking to these folks, you know, they had been working directly with the U.S. military. And, you know, some of them were translators, some of them were actually leading troops. And the last memories they have of being in Afghanistan are the Taliban in the street yelling that they want to murder you. I can't quite wrap my mind around it. It's a world that I haven't experienced, thankfully, but it really kind of hits you right in your core. you know, even as we're watching what's going on in Ukraine now, you wonder, people are reaching out, they're like, how do I help, what's going on, are there going to be refugees? And so it kind of has people thinking in a broader worldview right now, because we are this kind of bastion in the world, right? We have opportunity for folks. So I'm glad we were able to help.
B, we hear these stories about the people who came here, what they went through there. And yet, of course, there's still that lingering suspicion and fear. What's your understanding about how refugees were screened before they were placed in communities? Do you have a sense of how that worked?
I don't know the particulars about that, but I do know that, you know, many of these people were involved with the U.S. government and they worked for the U.S. government. And so if they were good enough to work for the U.S. government in Afghanistan, you know, I think that that speaks soundly to the fact that they have already gone through a screening. I know that when they were at the processing centers as well, Fort McCoy being one of them, there was an awful lot of screening that was going on. So I am confident that those individuals that are here under the best of circumstances. Lutheran Social Services of Wisconsin, which is the organization we're partnering with in Eau Claire, you know, has assured us that the people that we are working with have had the screening that one would expect at this point.
Katie, Wausau was central to the Hmong Refugee Resettlement Program in the 70s and 80s. I can still remember going to the airport, Central Wisconsin Airport, with my family and welcoming a family that our church had sponsored to come over. It was such an experience. What lessons learned from that effort translate to what's happening right now?
Yeah, that's a really it's an important point. We've learned a lot over the last 45 years of our Hmong neighbors being here. And, you know, we actually reached out and asked folks, what did you hear from your families that you didn't get? What kind of support? What did you need? And, you know, people were sharing some pretty heart-wrenching stories. And I think a lot of that, you know, the communication aspect is really important. Understanding what's going on. It's hard enough to go through culture shock. But then when you don't have words to help understand what's happening, that's the struggle. So, you know, as a city, we've worked hard on making sure we have access to translation services in Dari and Pashto so that if we have to interact or if we would like to interact, we were able to communicate very well. And that's been helpful. Again, it's not a solve, you know, and I think a lot of folks my age, particularly, they were first generation Americans. And they talked about their experiences in school. And so the schools have really stepped up and they're working to make sure students are feeling welcome and they have what they need. And, you know, ESL is not abnormal here. We have a lot of programming to help students who don't speak English as their first language. So it's really great. You know, we're still learning, obviously, but we have that opportunity. And I think there's a lot of folks that just want this to work for people. They want to welcome folks. They want to make sure they feel safe and secure.
In January, I was returning from a business trip. I flew into Central Wisconsin Airport, and there were about a dozen refugees aboard our aircraft. There was a whole welcoming crew waiting when we landed. It was really something to see. Margaret, take us through that. What is it like when you're waiting there, and here come these people, and what happens?
It's, you know, incredible. You know, it's like the, you know, everything coming to fruition. You know, I before refugees arrive, I've really found there's strong interest in sort of understanding, you know, what are the procedures, you know, from, you know, getting sort of booked on a flight and now they're in Wausau, right? So most of the refugees we're welcoming were temporary housed in our safe haven bases, right? But we, those were meant to be temporary residences as we, you know, figured out with among the resettlement agencies where people would like to be placed. And a key point here is that the refugees who are here, they had choice of where to go. And so part of our role was, you know, Adam Van Noord, the ECDC director here in Wausau, brand new to his job. You know, we were trying to promote Wausau because we do feel that, you know, people are going to benefit so much from being in this community. So he, there's just so much careful coordination goes into ECDC and New Beginnings. Our offices are across the hall from each other, highly interactive work. And when we get notice of arrival, Adam gets just a few days notice from a third party group that's booking these flights. And we contact co-sponsorship teams who've signed up, and we basically say flight arrival information is here. You typically about 2 to 3 days notice, where we literally hand them keys to a residence and say, this is, you know, you are learning for the first time who your family is, what the members are, you know, what their names are, what their ages. And they're handed the keys and said, make this into a welcoming home for a family in 2 days. And so that's sort of where New Beginnings comes in. As they furnish that home, they're handed a nesting list, which is a list from ECDC. That's a detailed list of all the items they need to secure and have in place to welcome families. So it's everything from silverware to mattresses. And, you know, again, with very few days notice, you know, they're expected to prepare a home. So New Beginnings, we are a volunteer organization. And one of our primary arms is to secure donations from the community. And so we are able to provide those co-sponsorship teams with 98% of the items that are on that list. So what is able to happen that way is they come to our donation center and they check off anything they need from that list. If it's there, they can take it. No, you know, all of those donations came from our community. So it is a direct, you know, donation in hand to the people who need things so desperately. And the importance there is because the co-sponsorship teams, you know, the families are given a very minimal amount of money from the State Department. And the co-sponsorship teams raise some funding in addition to that, right? It just gives the families a little bit of a longer runway to adjust, be able to have things like money for rent and clothing and food until they can get, you know, employment. So what New Beginnings, by providing those material donations, we're able to build these welcoming homes. And then that cash that's been raised on their behalf is able to go toward needs. You know, it doesn't have to go toward buying bed sheets. Sure. So it's just been wonderful to see the families, you know, enter these homes that are so lovingly, we're watching these co-sponsorship teams really, really work hard to make them welcoming and just going above and beyond. So again, it's that difference of, you know, just arriving and having your core services versus a true welcome.
Listeners can call with questions at 800-780-9742. You can email questions to us as well. The email address is ideas@wpr.org. Bea, I'm really curious, what kinds of culturally appropriate infrastructure is available in Eau Claire for refugees that are searching for appropriate clothing, food that meets their needs, a place of worship? How do they find those things and become connected with them?
Well, we're all learning that together, but we are very fortunate in Eau Claire to have a mosque that is located in Altoona. And they have been a wonderful partner as we are welcoming new neighbors. In terms of some of the members at the mosque have been able to communicate directly because there's not a language barrier. One of the mosque members brought prayer rugs to give the individuals when they arrived. So that's been a great resource. In addition, we are fortunate there have been a couple of places where we have been able to locate halal meat in Eau Claire, which is something that is, as I understand, butchered in a way that is respectful of the Islamic faith. And so that has been a great resource that we haven't had to track that down. Clothing, we're learning about. Many of our individuals came with a fair amount of clothing, and so We're assessing those clothing needs, but winter jackets, hats, and boots were something that were needed right away because it was a little chilly. We also kind of started a little bit behind the eight ball in that we needed to, Lutheran Social Services of Wisconsin needed to reach out to the state refugee coordinator to have a plan accepted to have refugees placed in Eau Claire because we are outside of a 100-mile limit of Milwaukee. And so we had heard probably about 2 weeks ago that our plan had been approved, and within 5 days we were told people were going to arrive. So fortunately, we had started collecting furniture and pledges ahead of time, because we are now moving people into apartments, and all of those things that have been donated, like in Wausau, are coming into great play to make homes for these individuals.
Katie, that brings up a question that we're hearing a lot about the needs that are being met, and we hear a lot about donations, but ultimately, who's footing the bill for all of this? Who's paying?
Yeah, so folks get a stipend from the Department of State, and I guess from what I've heard from Boyana at the state level, they have to repay their plane ticket. So there's a lot that goes into this, but ultimately they'll be on their own earning an income, whatever that is, and paying for their own stuff. From what I understand, the stipends they are getting from the Department of State is less than what refugees usually get, because we're in this middle of this crisis. I don't know the exact numbers on that, but it's enough maybe to last a month or two or three, and if you're very frugal. So that's what I understand. But obviously, the volunteers are huge. They're helping. I don't know how we would get through with these families without these families kind of co-sponsoring, just even showing folks how to get around and get what they need.
The language barrier has to be a significant issue. Margaret, talk about the way the women in your group found a way to engage with refugee women through drawing.
Yes. Yeah, so we had a we tried to host an event. Of course, with COVID, everything's been a little difficult, but we also recognize that there's this paramount need to connect these families and prevent, with winter and being in a brand new place, preventing feelings of isolation. So we prepared an event where we had our initial couple families gather and co-sponsorship teams. So this way, it's just sort of some intermixing that the teams could come together and sort of compare some stories and ideas. And then of course the Afghan families were able to meet and connect as well. This was very early in our very first weeks. And fascinatingly, it was so much fun to actually watch the children interact. I have a 5-year-old son, and Adam Van Noord actually has a 5-year-old as well. And they just jumped right in. It was the young children were just playing, and the language didn't slow them down at all. And so that was a very endearing thing. It just sort of shows the human condition, that kids are meant to play, and they don't have maybe the same filters on overanalyzing all of their interactions. But the women, again, trying to be culturally appropriate. So the women were sort of gathering with women, and particularly the women, largely because of the geopolitical circumstances that from which they come, they didn't have access to English languages. Some of them aren't even literate, in their own languages. So communication is a challenge. And you could see these co-sponsorship teams wanted so badly to connect and interact. And the tables we had were covered in butcher paper. And as I walked around and kind of, would peer over the shoulder, the co-sponsorship team women were communicating with their families by drawing pictures. So they were drawing, you could see houses, and then there were, stick figures. They were saying, this is my family, and this is my house, and I have a pet, and so it just was, impactful, because it just shows that, that's when there's a need to connect, and we can figure this out. And another story was, we had a table of sort of preteen girls, and that's awkward no matter what, but then you add the cultural, component. But it was very sweet because the American girls were making welcome signs, and the idea is this could be used at airport welcomes. And so they were writing welcome in English, and then the Afghan girls would turn it around, and then they would write welcome in Pashto above it. And so now we have these signs when we go to these airport pickups that have both the English and the Pashto on there. So it just, they were not given instruction on that. They figured it out.
You're listening to Margaret Pogoria, B. Evans, and Katie Rosenberg, our guests today on Route 51, as we delve into the Afghan refugee resettlement process. When we return, how volunteers are navigating the housing situation for refugees as rent continues to skyrocket statewide. We'd like to hear from you, too. You can join us by calling 800-780-9742. You can also send an email to ideas@wpr.org. I'm Shereen Seward. This is Route 51 on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're back on Route 51. I'm Shereen Seward. Our guests today are Margaret Pogoria, Wausau Mayor Katie Rosenberg, and Bea Evans. For a discussion on the Afghan resettlement process in Wisconsin, there are many questions about this process, and you're welcome to join the conversation. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or call us at 800-780-9742. Katie, tell me about the tattoo.
Yeah. So I loved Margaret's story talking about the drawing on the butcher paper to communicate. You know, and I've spent some time in Muslim majority countries, so I had like some ideas about the differences and the things that I get to experience as a woman interacting with other women that other folks can't. So I did have a nice little meeting with a couple of the refugee women, and you know, it was short because we didn't have a lot to say to each other. I don't know why I didn't bring my phone with me, but I saw on one of the woman's arms she had some tattoos, and so I pulled up my sleeve and we kind of shared this, and she actually shared the story of her tattoos. She had a flower that was from Afghanistan, and then she also had the name of God tattooed on her arm. And so, of course, I don't have that stuff. I had some birds because Wausau is apparently the bird city. So, but it was a nice connection, and we were able to see each other's skin right next to each other. Right, people. That was a question I was getting before folks come. Like, what do people look like from Afghanistan? I'm like, well, like me. I mean, really. So. Yeah,
another point of connection.
Right.
Turning to a little more serious subject, economists say higher rent prices are going to be a key driver of inflation in 2022. Average rent prices have risen significantly in the past several months in Wausau, La Crosse, Eau Claire, other area communities, not to mention an ongoing shortage of affordable housing, period. B, how is that affecting placement efforts in Eau Claire?
Well, we have been scrambling to find rental properties. We had several rental properties that we had our eyes on before we had acceptance of our plan to receive new neighbors here. So we did have to make use of temporary housing for a period of time and having our neighbors stay at a hotel. But we have signed leases on two apartments. And so four of our neighbors are moving into new apartments in the next couple of days, and the other four will move into a home that we have temporary use of until we can get additional apartments. But it is challenging, not only in terms from an economic standpoint, but also being close enough to a bus line so that people have the independence to be able to get around as they need to and get to their eventual jobs. And we will continue to provide financial support to Lutheran Social Services as gap funds to be able to help cover the cost of rent for a period of time. But the goal really is self-sufficiency and trying to get people moving forward in 6 to 9 months, as was mentioned before, to be operating on their own.
Transportation has got to be a huge issue. Wausau, too, has transportation struggles with bus service that is challenging, limited. Katie, what are you doing about that with refugees here? Or, I mean, are they finding other modes of transportation?
Both, all of it. So we want to make sure folks have the connections they need to get where they need to go. You know, I was riding the bus the other day and a family got on the bus after shopping at the grocery store. And it was nice to see them getting used to using the service. Now, they were with somebody who was guiding them. So that's been very helpful, thanks to New Beginnings and those folks. But yeah, transportation's a challenge. Obviously, we can get you where you need to go in Wausau in those limited times. But I think these volunteer families have been super helpful. I've seen them driving around, and it's just, again, those connections being made. It's not just, you know, being a chauffeur, it's being a friend and a guide in our community, which is, it's pretty amazing.
We have a caller on the line. It's Martha from Menominee. Thank you for calling, Martha.
Oh, thank you for having this show. See, my question is, it seems like the major hurdles are over. These people have been able to make it here and into the community. Where do we go from here? How can I live in Menominee, which is a little west of Eau Claire, but and maybe I missed this earlier, but where do people that want to continue to help, where can we in the Eau Claire area get involved, and what do you need most at this point?
Where can the folks in Eau Claire go to help?
Well, thank you for asking that question, Martha. We do have a Facebook page, Welcoming New Neighbors, Northwest Wisconsin Refugee Resettlement, that you can visit. You can also email us at newneighborsnorthwestwisconsin at gmail.com. I think that there will be a need, a financial need, for individuals for some time, not only for rent, but for other incidentals that come up. So financial donations are certainly appreciated. As we move forward and we become more familiar with other needs, I think that we will be able to reach out and let the community know about those. For instance, Ramadan is going to be celebrated on April 2nd. Is there something as a community that we can do to gift our new neighbors something in honor of Ramadan? So those kinds of activities will certainly be looking at and getting information out to the community about that.
What kinds of opportunities are available to help in Wausau, Margaret?
So there's, you know, two main avenues for people who want to help refugees in our area. So, you know, the first would also be, you know, material or financial donations. We have a website as well. It's www.newbeginningswi.org. And right, you know, right when you access the website, there's a, you know, give to this effort. And, you know, we welcome material in-kind donations. You know, the financial donations are going to continue to be very important. We need continued program development. We're finding as the refugees arrive and settle in, we get a better idea of, you know, the things they need going forward, identifying gaps, and those strategic partnerships within our community are going to be critical. And then also, you know, anybody who's closer, you know, there's always a need for people to join into the volunteer effort. So we really welcome people to get involved. You know, we kind of have a wide range of support that people can choose from. So that that is also available on the website with a volunteer link.
Thank you. Once Wausau was selected as a site for relocation, how did the business community respond, and how are they, are the refugees being matched to jobs? How important is that relationship with businesses in the area, Katie?
Okay, I'm going to jump on this first. So the first stuff I heard was absolute support. I mean, we're in a position right now with our economy where businesses are looking for folks to work of all kinds. And I actually heard from some people who are business owners, and they said, you know, I'm an immigrant to this country, and I think this effort is super important, and I want to give people a good start. I would like to hire 5 refugees. And I've heard many things like that. So I've been kind of connecting those people to the right efforts. Now, I know our job center has been doing a great job. They have a person working there specifically to match refugees to jobs. So that's really great. And there are certain programming things based on the visas and all of that. So they're sorting through it, but I'm hearing positive stuff. I know we had an interview with somebody here at City Hall who applied for a job. So it's kind of exciting to see, you know, how purpose and contribution will just change here with our new neighbors.
And what about retraining efforts? I mean, are you finding that that these folks are going to have to go through some education before they're able to get sustaining jobs?
Yeah, I'm not going to punt this one to Margaret, but I know she knows a lot about what's going on. I know there are some nonprofit organizations that are working through training, whether that's cultural competencies or just flat out language stuff, things you need to know. So maybe, Margaret, if you have more details on that, I know that's part of the efforts.
Sure, Margaret. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so part of the, you know, Services New Beginnings is providing our tutoring services. We have an amazing coalition of volunteers. Most of them are retired teachers, and they are using a nationally recognized curriculum that begins with a 2-week cultural orientation. So the adults are highly recommended to come in, and we've been able to provide them with classrooms that are, you know, one's for the men, one's for the women, because some of those cultural orientation topics for them, you know, are very culturally sensitive. So we feel that we're able to really address the cultural specific needs for them, as well as, you know, really provide that, you know, additional sort of initiation with just, you know, important information that might not be, you know, super obvious or intuitive to somebody just relocating. And then beyond that, we offer ELL services for language development. We are very lucky that almost every single household has at least one English speaker. And that's, you know, just sort of luck of the draw. But, you know, given that we didn't have an existing community here, it's very helpful. So anybody who's sort of beyond the very, very basic kind of ABCs is actually able to go right into our local technical college has an ELL program that we're partnering with as well. So all of that said, you know, the refugees are showing such a wide range of skills and abilities, but what I'm seeing is a very prominent theme is an eagerness to work. There's sort of just this drive. There's very much the sense of, I want to build a life and I want to contribute. We're so glad to be here. So we already have people that are working, and it's so much to the credit of the businesses in this community who have provided these opportunities and with an open mind and heart. And, you know, very much to what Bea was expressing with some of the housing challenges, you know, how do you find high quality housing that's affordable, you know, that happens to be available, located on the bus line? So, you know, there's this constant need to make sure that they gain employment that will allow them to keep access to, you know, as high quality of life in the beginning as possible.
The number for listeners to call is 800-780-9742. You can email questions to us, too, at ideas@wpr.org. B, is your sense that the refugees who are arriving here are pursuing a path to citizenship?
My understanding is that they have to apply for asylum in the United States within a year of their arrival. And once they apply for asylum, then that will be determined as to whether they will be given refugee status. So it is a very long welcome. It's not something that is going to happen immediately. They do have the opportunity to get a work permit as this is going on, but it will take some time.
Margaret, are school-aged children already attending school in our districts?
Yes, and we've been getting feedback that several teachers have commented on how incredibly well-behaved these children are, and sort of drawing connections to, wow, you know, it's been a little eye-opening. So it's, you know, it's been really fun. My daughter happens to attend school and actually be in the same grade, shared grade with one of the refugees, and they've become friends, and it's just been a really fun thing to watch the response of the kids' welcome.
How's the school district responding?
You know, I, from what I can tell, very, very well. We worked with them very closely leading up to this. So we have been very happy with the steps that were taken in preparation. And we're very grateful to the schools.
We've got about a minute left. And Katie, I'm going to ask you, what are some of the biggest misconceptions about this whole process that you'd really like to clear up?
Oh, sure. So, I mean, I could probably write you a list of these things, that I decided to do this on my own, all kinds of things. But, you know, this is a federal program, right? And it's really important, for us to be able to participate. So a lot of this is run through the federal government, and they have their own rules and things like that. So what I want to do is support the process. I want to support our neighbors. I want to support people who are here already. So I think probably just that whole process, there's a lot going on there. And when you asked about the US citizenship, you know, we ran into maybe 2 years ago a situation where we have a lot of Hmong refugees who did not apply for their citizenship and are facing some issues depending on who's in charge of the federal government. So, you know, these are things that we need to probably talk about as a community too. Oh man, we're running out of time. I can't even believe
We could have
it.
talked another hour, I'm sure of it. I'd like to thank all three of you for joining us today. This has been a fascinating discussion, very informative. Margaret Pagoria from New Beginnings, Bea Evans from Welcoming New Neighbors, Northwest Wisconsin Refugee Resettlement, and Wausau Mayor Katie Rosenberg. Our producers today are Joy Ratch Kramer, Kate Sprenger, and Rick Ryer. Rick Ryer is also our on-air producer today. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. You can hear the archive of today's program, as well as our previous programs at WPR.org/Route51. If you have an idea for a future program, email us at ideas@WPR.org. We'd love to hear from you. Join us next week. Until then, we're heading out of town.